sit back, relax, unless you're driving. It's time for That's a Freebie.
You're listening to That's a Freebie. This is episode 70, Dancing Mania. As usual, I'm going to open up with an Ask a Freebie question. This week's question was another anonymous one, and the question is, are you a one or two pillow person? It's a good question. I like it. Most of my life, I was actually a two pillow person because, well, I was always given two pillows when I was growing up by my parents, and I just figured everybody had two pillows. And then I met my wife, and she only uses one pillow. And I couldn't work that out. I was like, that's weird. Who only uses one pillow? And I gave it a try. And it turns out I'm a one pillow person. It was a lot more comfortable. I've always been, this is going to sound really, really weird, but I've always struggled to sleep on a pillow. I know it sounds odd. I know. Like, and it is odd. There's no denying that. But essentially what I mean by that is I don't have a good like pillow position. Like, I put my head on it and only my head is on the pillow. Like, my shoulders are not on the pillow. Now, from what I've looked at and read, like, the ideal position is to have your shoulders, like the top part of your shoulders on the pillow and your head so that it's supporting your neck. But I just can't do it. Like, I put the pillow like that and it always slides from underneath my head. So I end up with just like the top of my head on the pillow, which doesn't support me very well at all. So half the time when I wake up in the morning, the pillow is just like on the other side of the bed, and I've probably just chucked it in the night and not even realized. Yeah, I've never been able to understand why I can't find a good pillow position. I've even tried like, you know, these like orthopedic pillows and all the special pillows that you see. I've tried them all. I'm now on a pillow made by the mattress company Simba, because we have a Simba mattress, and that's the best pillow I've ever had. It's adjustable, so it has like these little foam cubes inside it that you can take out and put more in. It's completely cleanable. Great pillow. Absolutely love it. But I do still have the same problem of it slides out from underneath me. So it doesn't help that I think I have a weird sleeping position in the bed as well. I don't... God, this sounds so strange. It makes me sound like a right weirdo. But I sleep quite low down in the bed. I notice when, like... my wife's always higher in the bed. Her head is almost touching the headboard on the bed, whereas I don't like to be anywhere near that thing. I think I've banged my head on it so many times in my life, and I just don't. I try and avoid it. But yeah, I from what I can gather, most people sleep with the head much closer to the top of the bed than I do. I'm a good like head's width away from the top of the bed. I don't know. It's how I'm comfortable. I've tried moving further up, and it just doesn't feel right to me. And then this is the really weird part, and it is really weird. I might have mentioned this before. I feel like I've mentioned it before, but maybe not. I sleep face down, which, you know, obviously looks like I'm suffocating. My wife's just got used to it over the years. But I always remember the time I realized that I did it, because I've never really thought about it before. Basically, because of where my pillow is, when I turn onto my side, it's basically just on my forehead. So it's actually quite comfortable sometimes to sleep like fully on your front, and my head essentially facing down, like I'm facing into the bed. It's quite comfortable on my neck, because I do get a sore neck, probably because of my poor sleeping position. But I remember we had a friend come and stay over with us, and my friend had her kids with her. So what we did, we set the sofa bed up downstairs, and me and the wife slept on the sofa bed, and our kids stayed in their rooms with, one of her kids stayed with one of ours, I can't remember which, and she stayed in our bed with one of her kids. And she came down in the middle of the night, apparently, to get a drink of water. And I was sleeping face down, and she panicked and thought that I'd suffocated. And then it wasn't until I let out this really big snore that she realized that wasn't the case. And she came running. She didn't come running. She was going to come running over, and then obviously realized that I was absolutely fine. Yeah, it was a bit of a weird one. If you would like to ask your own question, all you need to do is go to thatsafreebie.com. And you can fill in the multi-purpose feedback form that lets you submit a question, lets you give general feedback, and it also lets you submit a topic for Pod Tales. Earlier on this week, I had my, I was going to say annual, but to be honest, it's almost like every 2 to 3 years at this point, trip to audiology. Although regular listeners of the show will know, over the last year, I've been to audiology quite a few times, which is a bit unusual for me. I'm quite self-sufficient when it comes to looking after my hearing aids. I can change my own tubes, you know, all that kind of stuff. I just don't bother going in for it because it's a waste of an appointment for someone to go in and change a tube that takes like 10 minutes. And it's a half hour appointment you book, and it's just a complete waste of time for everybody. Someone else could have that appointment. However, I've been having no end of problem with my hearing aids since I got this new set. So about 2.5 years ago now, before that, I was on a trial for a set of headphones, I nearly said then, hearing aids from a company called Starkey. And they were great. I loved them. They were absolutely perfect. They sounded good. The streaming was okay. Streaming is always a little bit off anyway, more from a... the distance isn't very good point of view. If I've got my phone in my pocket and I'm in an open area, they tend to disconnect if I'm streaming audio, like listening to a podcast or playing music, anything like that. That's just because of the size of the receivers for the Bluetooth chip. If you're in an indoor area, the Bluetooth signals bounce off the walls because Bluetooth doesn't penetrate walls, and it goes back to the phone, or it goes back towards me, which means it's a better signal. So that's the only reason I tend to have issues with hearing aids in general, is that the receivers are just a little bit small for Bluetooth, so that essentially that function of them isn't great. But sound-wise, they sounded great. They did the job. I was able to hear. I had a bit of trouble in noisy places, but even generally people do, so, you know, that wasn't a big issue. And I went in just because I needed new ear molds at the time, so they did me new ear molds, and they said, "The only trouble is we can't retune your hearing aids to match your new molds because we don't do these ones anymore. They were part of a trial that's ended." But the good news is you get a new set because we've started using this different brand. And the brand are Danalogic, which are also known as Resound. Resound are essentially the ones that you can buy from Costco. They seem to be, from what I can tell, they're like Costco's main brand. They're the same as Kirkland ones. Danalogic are just the name of the company when they sell to the NHS. They just use a different company name because somehow it's probably some sort of tax issue. Not tax issue, tax avoidance thing or something like that. It wouldn't surprise me. It'd be some sort of scam. Who knows? I am just speculating there. I don't know. But, you know, why would you bother having a different brand name across different areas of retail? Anyway, they changed them for these Danalogic ones. And they have been the worst things I've ever had in my ears. And I put a lot of things in my ears, as you might imagine. So the quality of them is poor. If I'm anywhere that's loud, they turn off and they restart. I always assumed it was part of trying to protect my hearing, but it happens so frequently. It got worse and worse. Like, it gets to the point where it's doing it every single day. So over the course of the last 2.5 years, I've had 3 pairs of these same hearing aids, and every time the same thing happens. They get to the point where they're restarting so often that I just can't rely on them anymore, and I basically don't wear them, and I have to wear them when I'm at work because otherwise I won't be able to hear anybody speaking at all, but I don't wear them when I'm outside of work because they're just a nightmare. They're an absolute nightmare, which is obviously not great when you can't hear people, because I've no idea what anyone's saying to me. And so I went on last Monday, it was, and I spoke to the audiologist, and I was at a different audiology department than the one that I usually go to, just because of availability. And I told her the problems that I was having, everything that I've just described to you. You know, I said, they've just been a nightmare since the start. I really don't like them. And she said, yeah, I hate these ones as well. They're a terrible brand. They're just really, really cheap. I'm assuming somebody got a cheap contract and went with it. She said, sadly, they are the ones we give out now they give different things out for different types of hearing. She said, they are the ones we give out now for your type of hearing. She said, if they're restarting on you often, though, I probably just need to replace them again. And she said, let me have a quick look on the system. And she's looking through, and she went, huh, hang on a minute. And she said, let me just pull up your audiogram, because something doesn't seem right here. And she had a look, and she went, ah, yes. She said, you've been given the wrong ones. I said, pardon? She's like, yeah, you weren't supposed to have these ones in the first place. According to our system, you were supposed to be prescribed a different brand, because they're more suitable for your hearing loss. The ones that you've been given are for moderate to, oh, I can't remember what she named it, but basically a lower level of hearing loss. She said, so these can't actually be tuned to the level of hearing loss that you have. Your hearing loss is severe. So I was like, yeah, that actually sounds right, because they don't pick up sound as I expect them to, as all my previous ones have done. She's like, yep, you've actually been prescribed one type and given a different type, and then when you've come in every other time, all they've done is looked at the ones you've got and just replaced them for the same ones. No, it looks like no one's actually gone back and double checked. She said I only noticed by accident, because I scrolled too far down on the list. I was like, brilliant. So anyway, she said the only drawback is I haven't got the correct ones here now. We'll have to order them specially because they're not something that we keep in. We're supposed to give the Danalogic ones out to pretty much everybody, but you need a different set. So I'm like, okay, fine. So I booked an appointment to go back on the 18th of November, and I'll be getting a pair of Phonak ones, which are the brand that I very first had, which are the best ones I ever had. And she's given me the models. There's two versions of them that I could end up with either one of them. I think it depends whichever one they get sent. But they're both for severe hearing loss, and they're both like the higher end ones that they do. So I'm actually quite looking forward to that. We'll see how it goes. I'll let you know, obviously, closer to the time what happened. But yeah, I've been wearing the wrong hearing aids for 2.5 years, really struggling with them, and been getting no response whatsoever that was suitable to fix my problem. So anyway, we seem to be moving along, so that would be great. I guess we'll have to wait and see. While I was there in audiology, there was a guy sat outside. So I rocks up with the kids because it was the school holiday, so I had the kids with me. And I sat down, and there's this guy sat at the side of us, and he was on the phone. Now, everywhere in the audiology department, like right in front of his face, there are signs everywhere that say, do not talk on the phone. There are sound tests going on. If you talk on the phone, it will disrupt the test. The signals interfere with the equipment. Like, it's just a thing. You go into audiology, you turn your phone off because you can hear it interfering with the equipment. You can hear like you know that sound that you get. And he's there waffling away on his phone really, really loud the entire time. And his hearing aids weren't fit properly. I could tell because all I could hear was feedback coming from them constantly. They weren't even in. It wasn't that they didn't fit right. They weren't in his ears correctly. I get the feeling that he was new to them, and just hadn't got used to installing them correctly, because he had mold like me, and you have to make sure the mold fits. Blah blah blah. And they just weren't. They were squealing. I could see that it was sticking out of his ear and it was hanging out. And the kids are like, "What's that sound, Dad?" I was like, "It's that gentleman's hearing aids. They're squealing. Maybe that's why he's here. I don't know." Thinking I could try and, you know, engage him in conversation and try and help him out a bit. Anyway, he turns to me and he goes, what time's your appointment? So I told him the appointment time, and he went, oh, God, another one. So I was like, okay. I said, what's wrong? He went, well, you all keep turning up, don't you? Like, what, for our appointments? He's like, yeah. So I was like, yeah, of course we're turning up for our appointments. That's why we booked them in the first place. He said, well, I'm waiting to get seen by somebody. And they've told me that if somebody doesn't show up, I can have their appointment. So I'm like, oh, okay. Well, you know, you'll probably find that most people will show up because these appointments are really hard to get. He said, yeah, I know, I've been trying to get one. I was like, well, you can't be trying that hard, because I phoned up 3 days ago and got this one. Like, I was surprised I got this one. So, you know, and you're sat here at the same time as me, so you were obviously available at that time. Anyway, it was a grumpus. So I didn't carry on that conversation. So before the appointment, the audiologist comes out, she calls my name, and she looks at him and she says, what are you doing? Like, oh God. And he said, I'm waiting for someone not to show up. And she said, I've already told you that's not how it works. Right? This is the appointment I'm about to start is my last appointment of the day. If I finish it early, I am going to go home. I will not see you because I'm already behind. And she was. I was due to have been seen 20 minutes earlier. She said, I am not going to see you. There is nobody else here. There is only me. I've told you a few hours ago now that you won't get seen. Stop wasting your time. Go and book an appointment. We've got appointments all next week. And anyway, no, I will wait. So anyway, when we came out, he went, ah, finally. And he got up, walked to the door to go to the room. So she closed the door behind her and locked it. And she just looked at me and the kids and she went, do you mind if I walk down with you to reception? I'm like, yeah, no, that's not a problem. So we walked down to reception and she disappeared through another door and then we went the opposite way. And he went and sat back down in the corridor waiting to be seen. I'm like, what is going through these people's minds? Like, he obviously wasn't going to get seen. Anyway, that's what happened. Audiology stories. It looks like it's the season for them because there's probably going to be another one in a few weeks when I get seen again. I was in Costa yesterday, actually. So this would have been Sunday because it's Monday now that I'm recording. And saw something really bizarre. There's probably a simple explanation for it, but it looked bizarre and I couldn't really work out what was going on. So I'm sat there staring into space. I'm listening to a podcast, eating some toast, drinking my coffee, staring out the window. But I'm sat quite far inside of this Costa. I'm not actually sat out the window. And I saw someone get up from their table and they left. The reason I remember it is I looked at the table and saw that they'd left the tray on the table. And I went, oh, I hate it when people do that, when they don't put the stuff in the bin. And then I was like, oh, no, wait. I'm in Costa, that's what you do. It's not like we're in a food court and you put your stuff away. And then I was like, oh, yeah, idiot, I forgot about that, right? Simple as that. And then I'm staring away at the window again. And then a guy came in, just regular-looking guy, dressed nicely, chatting away on his phone, and sits down at that table that the person had just got up out of. And I thought to myself, who does that? There's loads of tables free that are empty and clean. Who sits at the dirty one? That's a bit weird. And then he just picked up the cup and started drinking out of it. Just finishing off the guy's cup of tea. I was like, oh, okay, that's weird. I was like, did he leave and he's come back in and sat at the wrong table? So I started looking around to see if there was another table that still had a cup on, thinking he's going to notice any minute. But nope, he sat there. He had a sip of the tea. He got the teapot and he looked inside it and saw that there was still water in, so poured himself another. He probably got half a cup out of it. Squashed the tea bag out, all that kind of stuff. Sat there and drank it, and then got up and left. Like, oh, okay, is that a thing we do? No judgment. Maybe he was homeless. He didn't look like he was, but you never know, do you? Not everybody looks like the stereotype that you expect them to look. No idea. He looked like he'd just come in, sat at the wrong table, drunk somebody else's drink and left. And I think that's what happened, but I couldn't see any other area he could have been unless they cleared up after him. I looked around and I could see that the staff had noticed as well. And they were sort of pointing and talking to one another. And one of them just sort of waved their hands as if to say, yeah, just leave it. It's probably not worth getting involved. And then when he left, they quickly went over and cleared the table in case he came back. And he did. He came back a little bit later, sat back down at the same table. But this time, obviously, there was nothing there. Didn't bat an eye, just sat there talking away on his phone. And then I got up and left because I was due to leave. Yeah, weird, weird time. Our topic for this week is dancing mania. What is dancing mania? Well, imagine hundreds, sometimes thousands of people dancing in the streets, but not for fun or celebration, for dancing uncontrollably, for hours, days, even weeks. This strange event known as dancing mania or the dancing plague took over parts of Europe between the 14th and 17th centuries, People would dance until they collapsed from exhaustion, and in some cases, they reportedly danced themselves to death. Sounds wild, right? Yeah, but it did really happen. Dancing mania was a bizarre and mysterious phenomenon that spread across Europe, affecting adults and children. It wasn't a one-off event either. Outbreaks happened over several centuries. One of the most major cases occurred in Aachen, Germany, in 1374, and perhaps the most famous outbreak happened in 1518 in Strasbourg, which is modern-day France. In that case, a woman started dancing in the street, and within days, hundreds of others had joined her. These outbreaks weren't your typical dance parties. People danced erratically, often unable to stop, collapsing from exhaustion and, in rare cases, dying. Contemporary accounts described people leaping, hopping, and flailing about uncontrollably. Musicians were sometimes brought in to help the dancers, but that often made things worse by encouraging even more people to join in. And here's where it gets even more mysterious. No one really knows what caused dancing mania. Some thought it was a curse from a saint like Saint Vitus or Saint John the Baptist, which is why it's also called St. Vitus Dance or St. John's Dance. Others believe the dancers were possessed by demons. People tried praying to saints, performing exorcisms, and even playing music to stop the madness, but none of these methods really worked. Modern theories suggest it could have been a form of mass hysteria, a psychic epidemic brought on by stress. At the time, Europe was facing wars, famine, and the aftermath of the Black Death. So it's possible that all the hardship led to this collective breakdown. Some historians also speculate that it could have been triggered by ergot poisoning, a fungus found in rye bread that can cause hallucinations and muscle spasms. Still, none of these explanations fully account for the scale and the strangeness of the phenomenon. One of the earliest recorded outbreaks happened in the 7th century, but the most notable ones occurred later, in 1237. A group of children danced their way from one town to another in modern-day Germany, in a story reminiscent of the Pied Piper of Hamelin. In 1278, about 200 people danced on a bridge over the River Meuse, and the bridge, as you can imagine, collapsed under their weight. The largest outbreaks occurred in the 14th and 15th centuries. In 1374, thousands of people in cities across Europe were gripped by dancing mania, with major outbreaks reported in Germany, France, and the Netherlands. The biggest outbreak in 1518 saw people dancing in the streets of Strasbourg for over a month. Doctors at the time were baffled and even hired musicians to keep the dancers going, thinking they would eventually dance the mania out of their system. The behaviour of the dancers wasn't just limited to wild, uncontrollable dancing. Some participants reportedly dressed in strange clothes, carried sticks, or even danced naked. They didn't seem to be fully aware of what they were doing, as if they were in a trance. Many screamed, laughed, cried, or sang as they danced, while others made obscene gestures or acted like animals. People affected by dancing mania couldn't stand the colour red and would sometimes become violent if they saw it. They also apparently hated pointed shoes. Yeah, really. I mean, I've got to admit, I hate pointed shoes as well. Side note, someone once kicked me in the nuts with pointed shoes. It really hurts. Some outbreaks were so intense that dancers broke their ribs or collapsed from sheer exhaustion. The most extreme cases ended in death. Despite these bizarre and sometimes dangerous behaviours, the mania was contagious, spreading from one person to another as if the need to dance was in the air. So, what was really going on? Well, scholars have spent centuries trying to figure it out, and there are several theories. One of the most popular is that it was a form of stress relief, people dancing their troubles away in difficult times. Others suggest it was a kind of social contagion, and where the idea of dancing uncontrollably spread from person to person, like a psychological virus. Some people believe that it might have been connected to religious cults or ancient rituals, while others point to ergot poisoning, which can cause hallucinations and convulsions. It's even a theory that the outbreaks were staged in a way to get people to rebel against social restrictions, using the cover of dancing mania to break the rules. In Italy, a similar phenomenon called tarantism involved people dancing to rid themselves of what they believed was venom from a tarantula bite. The only cure, they thought, was to dance until the venom was expelled from their bodies, Like, dancing mania and tarantism involved wild dancing, and music was often used to cure the dancers. Though it sounds like something out of a strange fairy tale, dancing mania was a very real and is now considered one of the earliest examples of mass hysteria. The combination of superstition, religious fervour and social stress created the perfect storm for this bizarre phenomenon to take hold. Despite numerous theories, the cause of dancing mania remains a mystery. That's the story of dancing mania, a historical reminder that sometimes when life gets overwhelming, people really do dance like no one's watching. But in this case, they might have just kept dancing forever. So next time you feel like dancing, remember the curious case of the dancing plague, and maybe thankful that you're only dancing for fun. The pick of the week this week is another podcast. That's correct. I have not yet run out of podcasts that I listen to. And I'm talking on a weekly basis. So all of the podcasts that I've currently been through, I listen to every single week. Oh, well, every episode that comes out. Some of them are bi-weekly. I think one of them is once a month. This is the only exception that I would say, well, I probably do listen to it every week, but I maybe listen to more episodes than one a week because there is a massive back catalogue of this one. It's called Total Party Kill, and it's a Dungeons & Dragons podcast. And it's essentially all of the people whose podcasts I've been talking to you about over the last few weeks, all of the hosts of those shows, they're all part of a couple of podcast networks. Actually a couple. There's probably three in there, but there's two that are sort of heavily aligned. There's the Incomparable Network and there's the Relay FM Network. And a lot of the hosts on there are friends with one another, just from the podcast space, as it were. And what they do is they play Dungeons & Dragons, and they record the sessions when they do it. It's audio. There is a video version. If you're a member of the Incomparable, you do get a video version of it as well. I've tried the video version. I don't think it adds much, to be truthful. Audio is fine. Otherwise, all you see is a board with characters moving around it, and you can visualize it quite well, as is the point of Dungeons & Dragons in general. It's a decent podcast. There are hundreds and hundreds of episodes already released, and I started listening to it probably about a year ago. I've known about it for a long time. I never really had space in my life for it, and I wasn't really into Dungeons & Dragons much, but as I've got more into it after playing Baldur's Gate 3, and then, as I've mentioned previously, playing it with the kids, I've started listening to it more because it gives me ideas as well for when I'm playing with the kids. and so I started listening to this podcast. I'm a couple of hundred episodes in. What I tend to do is I download all of one adventure, and then I listen to that. Like, when I've not got anything else to listen to, I'll listen to that. Or when I don't want to listen to something, I don't know, tech related, when I just want a bit of time to just listen to something fun, I listen to this. It's extremely funny. Once you get to know the players as well, you get to see their sense of humor, and you get to see, you don't get to see anything. You get to hear, like the in-jokes they have with one another. And you realize they are actually they're not just hosts of these shows. They are friends with one another, and it's weird, but it's good. It's worth giving it a listen. Obviously if you're into Dungeons and Dragons, if you're not, you might not find it that interesting. But what you are better off doing is don't do what I did. When I first started listening to it, I just started from the current episode. Couldn't get into it. This was like 3 or 4 years ago. I just could not get into it. I listened to like a good like 5 episodes or so, because I always do that. When you're listening to a podcast, it's always a good idea to listen to a few episodes just to make sure you're in the flow of it and you understand like all the in bits and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, I just couldn't get into it. And it's because I didn't have the history of previous episodes. And they did a UK version. So what I did is I went and I just listened to the UK version. It's some hosts that are, well, from the UK. So they did like a special. And because I listened to that campaign all the way from the start to the end, I got it a bit more, I understood it a bit more, and I found it much more entertaining. So I went back and started at the beginning of the first episode of Total Party Kill, and turns out really entertaining, worth having a listen to. It's available for free. It's not something you have to be a member of the Incomparable to listen to. If you are a member of the Incomparable, though, you do get the entire sessions that they do. So like 3 or 4 hour sessions as a, you can just download that instead of having all the individual episodes from each session, which I found a little bit easier to manage because I basically just download an entire campaign and then I could listen to that instead of having to, because what happens is during the course of play, they'll start a new campaign with some different people and things like that. So you might be listening to one and it'll get cut off and it'll be like, they'll do the Halloween special, which is great. It's good. It's okay to listen to it in that order, but I just like to hear the entire campaign first. I was reading an article the other day and it was about suction cups. I was looking into, I don't know if you've seen it, nano suction technology. I was looking into that. I can't even remember why now, but yeah, just one of those things I got in, you know, when you go down a rabbit hole. And I discovered actually that there's a company who's made the world's strongest suction cup. Yeah, I'm not quite sure how they pulled it off.